rolling away from the taxi. A dozen vans and covered trucks surround the car. Each vehicle has a similar smudge of red paint on the doors, but I can't quite make out what it is. Men in street clothes jump out of the vans, machine guns ready. Now the adrenaline really starts to flow. It always kicks in before a fight. I look over at Marina and see the terrified look on her face, but I know she will take her cues from me. I keep myself calm. You guys ready? Marina? Ella? They nod. Creighton puts his hand up. Wait. Look at the trucks, Six. Look at their doors.
What?
Ella asks. What's on their doors? The men come closer, their shouts growing urgent. I'm too focused on the imminent danger to consider what Creighton is talking about. When people with guns threaten me or the ones I love, I'll make sure they regret it. Marina looks out the window.
Six, look! Are those number...
I finally see what they're all staring at, just as the door next to Marina is whipped open. The red smudges on the truck doors are all eights.
Out!
The man yells. Do as he says, Creighton says under his breath, voice calm. For now, we do what they want. We carefully get out of the taxi, our hands up, all four of us transfixed by the red numbers painted on the truck doors. We must be moving too slowly because one of the men leans forward and impatiently yanks Ella forward. She loses her balance and falls down. I can't help myself. I don't care if they're with number eight or not. You don't knock an 11-year-old girl to the ground. I heave the man into the air with my mind, tossing him onto the roof of a warehouse across the street. The other men panic, whipping their guns around and screaming to one another. Creighton grabs my arm. Let's find out why they're here and if they know where number eight is. If we need to, we'll strike with full force then. Still furious, I shake off his hand, but I nod. He's right. We don't know what they want with us. Better to find out before they're unable to explain. A tall, bearded man wearing a red beret steps out of one of the covered trucks and slowly walks towards us. His smile is confident, but his eyes are wary. A small pistol sticks out of his shoulder holster.
Good afternoon and welcome, he says in thickly accented English. I am Commander Grahish Sharma of the rebel group Vishnu Nationalist 8. We come in peace.
Then what are the guns for? Creighton asks.
The guns were to convince you to come with us. We know who you are and would never engage in a battle with you. We know we'd lose. Vishnu told us you are all-powerful like him.
How did you find us? Creighton demands. And who is Vishnu?
Vishnu is the all-pervading essence of all beings, the master of the past, present, and future, the supreme god and preserver of the universe. He told us you would be four in total, three young girls and one man. He asked me to convey a message to you.
What's the message? I say.
Commander Sharma clears his throat and smiles.
His message is, I am number eight. Welcome to India. Please come and see me as soon as you can.
Chapter 4. The sky is gray and heavy. The woods are dark and cold. Most of the leaves have fallen from the trees and lie dead on the ground. Nine walks ahead of me, scanning the landscape for game.
You know, that rabbit was better than I thought it would be.
He produces a short piece of vine from his pocket and pulls his shaggy black hair into a ponytail.
I'll make it again tonight if you're interested.
I think I'll figure something else out. He looks surprised at my squeamishness.
Scared of fresh kill? You have to eat if you want to get your strength up. I don't know why, but our healing stones don't do jack shit for your pain. And, you know, this sickness thing of yours is a real drag. Time's a-wasting, dude. We need to get you better, and we've got to get out of here.
I know how weak my body is, by how tired I feel as we walk. We're only a couple hundred yards from our ramshackle house, and I'm exhausted already. I want so badly to be back there, sleeping. But I know I won't feel normal again if I don't get off my butt and move. Hey, Nine, let me tell you about this dream I just had, I say. He snorts.
A dream? No thanks, man. Well, unless it was about girls. That you can tell me all about. In detail.
I saw Cetricus Ra. I talked to him. Nine pauses, then keeps walking. He offered me a deal.
Oh yeah? What kind of deal?
If I go back to him and face him, he said I'll let everyone else live, including Sam. Nine snorts.
That's a load of crap. Mogadorians don't make deals. At least, they don't make deals with any intention of keeping up their end of the bargain. And they don't show mercy.
I figure, why not just pretend I'm taking him up on it? I have to go back to the cave anyway to get Sam out. Nine turns to me, his face a mask of disinterest.
Hate to break it to you, dude, but Sam's probably dead. The Moogs don't care about us, and they don't care about humans. I think you had a bad dream, and I'm sorry you got all scared and felt the need to bore me with it. But even if you did channel Cetricus Ra, that kind of offer is obviously a trap, and you'll die walking into it. In fact, you'll die going within 10 miles of that place, I guarantee it.
He spins around and walks away from me.
Sam's not dead,
I say, anger welling up inside of me, giving me a strength I haven't felt in days. And the dream was real. Cetricus Ra was torturing him. I watched his skin sizzle from boiling liquid dropping onto it. I'm not going to just sit around here and let it continue to happen. He laughs again. But this time, it isn't with a sneer. Not exactly reassuring, but definitely more gentle.
Listen, Four. You're too weak to even run in place, never mind fight the most powerful being in the galaxy. I know it sounds heartless, dude, but Sam is human. There's no way you can save them all. So stop wasting your time and energy. It's not like you have an unlimited supply of either.
The lumen in my palm starts to light up. I'm in control of it now. Definite improvement. I'm hoping the glow is a sign the effects of the blue force field are wearing off.
Look, Sam is my best friend, Nine. You need to get that and keep your opinions about my energy to yourself, okay? No, you look, says Nine.
His voice sounds flat.
This isn't playtime. We're at war, dude. War. And you can't make this about your feelings for Sam if it makes everyone else less safe. I will not let you abandon the rest of us to face Cetricus Ra just for Sam. We're going to wait until you feel better, whenever the hell that is, and then we're going to meet up with the others and train until we're ready. If you don't like it, then you'll have to fight me to get out of here. And I'm so ready for a fight. So really, bring it on. I could use the practice.
He lifts his hand and aims it at something through the trees. A second later, I hear a quick yelp.
Got it!
Nine smiles, clearly proud of his telekinetic hunting skills. I follow him, refusing to give up. Isn't there anyone you would die for? Anyone you'd risk your life to help?
I'm risking my life to help Lorien, Nine says,
fixing me with a stare that makes me listen.
I'll die for Lorien, and anyone who's Lorik. And if I die, that's a big if. I plan on doing it with 2 Moog heads smashed between my palms and another one under my foot. I'm not looking forward to feeling your symbol burned into my leg just yet, so grow up. Stop being so naive and think about more than yourself already.
His words hit me hard. I know that Henri would agree with him, but I will not turn my back on Sam again. I don't know if it's Nine's arrogance, or the urgency of the vision I just had, or the fresh air and the walking, but my mind seems to be clear and strong for the first time in days. Sam saved my ass more than once, and his dad was there to meet our ship when we landed on Earth. His dad may have even died for us, for Lorien. You owe it to both of them to go back to the cave with me. Today. Not a chance. I step towards him, and Nine doesn't hesitate. He grabs me and throws me against a tree. I pull myself to my feet, and I'm about to swing at him when we hear twigs cracking behind us. Nine turns towards the noise. I flatten myself against the tree, dimly lighting my palms to be ready to blind whoever it is with my lumen. I hope I haven't overestimated how much of my strength is truly back. Nine looks over at me and whispers,
"Sorry about you and the tree. Let's go find whoever's tracking us and kill them before they kill us."
I nod, and we step forward. The noise came from a patch of pines, thick with needles and offering excellent cover. If it were up to me, we'd wait and see who or what we're facing. But not Nine. He's wearing a strange little smile as we move towards the pines, ready to destroy whatever emerges. The pines rustle again, and one of the lower branches moves. But what we see isn't a Mogadorian cannon or gleaming sword. Instead, the small black nose of a brown and white beagle emerges.
"Vernie Kozar," I say, relieved. "Good to see you, buddy."
He trots over, and I bend down to pet his head. He's the one creature who has been with me since the beginning. Vernie Kozar tells me he's happy to see me back on my feet.
"He took long enough, right?"
Nine says. I'd forgotten Nine had also developed the legacy to communicate with animals. I know it's immature, but it bothers me to share that power with him. He's already the biggest and strongest guard I've ever seen, has the ability to transfer powers to humans, an anti-gravity legacy, super speed and hearing, telekinesis, and whatever else he hasn't told me yet. My lumen sets me apart from the rest. But unless I find a source of fire to combine it with, it's practically useless. My ability to talk to animals was something I was looking forward to developing further, but now I'm sure Nine will find a better use for it before me. Vernie Kozar must see the disappointment on my face because he asks if I want to go for a walk with him, alone. Nine hears him and says,
"Go for it. You're all BK talks about anyway. Whenever he wasn't patrolling the perimeter, he was in the bedroom looking after you."
I keep petting his head. "That was you, huh?" Vernie Kozar licks my hand. "My other best friend," I say.
"I'd die for you too, BK.
Nine groans at the display of emotion. I know we're supposed to have each other's back in this massive intergalactic war, but sometimes I wish it were just BK and me. And Sam, and Sarah, and Six, and Henri. Really, I'd take anyone but Nine.
I'm going to find whatever it was I killed out there. Make sure we have some food for tonight,"
Nine says as he walks away.
"You guys go have your special walk. When you get back, we need to talk about finding the rest of the guard, now that you're functioning."
"And how exactly are we going to find them? The address Six gave us for a meeting point was in Sam's pocket. For all we know, the Moogs have it and are waiting for Six to show up." "That sounds like even more reason to find Sam, if you ask me," I say pointedly. Vernie Kozar agrees. It sounds like he wants to look for Sam almost as much as I do.
"We'll talk about it over dinner. I'm thinking possum. Maybe a muskrat," he says,
already heading into the woods to find his prey. Bernie Kosar tells me to follow him, and he leads me through the trees and down a tall, grassy hill. The land levels out for a few feet before rising again. We move quickly, and the exercise feels amazing now that my strength is returning. Two huge trees lean into each other up ahead. I focus and push them apart with my mind. As soon as there's a space between them, BK jumps through, and I chase after him, remembering our early morning runs to school back in Paradise. Life was so much easier then, when my days were spent training with Henri and my free time was spent with Sarah. It was exciting finding out what I was capable of, how my powers would help me do what needed to be done. Even when I was frustrated or scared, there was so much possibility, and I could just focus on that. I had no idea how good I had it. My back is sticky with sweat by the time we reach a small peak. I'm better, but still not 100%. The view is spectacular. A panoramic scene of the Appalachian Mountains, wrapped in fir trees, bathed in the late afternoon light. I can see for miles. I gotta say, buddy, this is pretty awesome. Is this what you wanted me to see? I ask. Off in the distance, down on the left, he says. Do you see it? I scan the landscape. In that deep valley? Beyond it, he says. Do you see that glow? Squinting, I look past the valley. There's a cluster of thick trees and the faint outline of a rocky riverbed. Then I see it. Through the bottom of the trees on the far left is a glowing sliver of blue light. It's the force field at the bottom of the Moog's headquarters. It can't be more than 2 miles away. Bernie Kosar says we can go back right now if I want. He'll join me inside this time. Now that Sam and I disabled the system that sent a gas deadly to animals through the mountain. A shiver runs down my body as I stare at the blue light. Sam is in there. And Cetricus Ra. What about 9? Bernie Kosar circles my legs twice before sitting at my feet. It's up to you, he says. 9 is strong and fast, but he's also unpredictable. Have you taken him up here? I ask. Does he know how close we are? Bernie Kosar cocks his head as if to say, yes. I can't believe he knew and didn't tell me. That's enough. I'm done with 9. I'm going back to the house. I'll give 9 the option of coming with us, but whatever he says, it's time for me to face Cetricus Ra.
Chapter 5. We bounce along a pothole-riddled road in a military transport truck. We're on the outskirts of the city, and I look around. I see a massive mountain range looming in the distance, but that doesn't tell me much. Vehicles full of soldiers are in front of us and behind us. My chest is at my feet, and 6 is sitting next to me. That makes me breathe a little easier. After the battle in Spain, the only time I feel even slightly safe is when 6 is near. I didn't think I would ever miss the Sisters of Santa Teresa, but right now I'd give anything to be back at the convent. For years, all I thought about was escaping their rules and punishments. But now that I have escaped, all I want is something familiar, even if it comes in the form of religious discipline. My sapon, Adelina, is dead. Murdered by Mogadorians. My best and only friend, Hector Ricardo, is also dead. The town and convent are both gone, obliterated by the Moogs. The deaths weigh heavily on me. I was the one Adelina and Hector were fighting to protect. God, I hope I'm not a curse. I hate the idea that my inexperience and lack of training might hurt anyone else. I don't want to put this mission in India in jeopardy just by my presence. Finally, Commander Sharma turns around to give us the lay of the land.
This trip will last a few hours. Please get comfortable. Help yourself to water in the cooler behind you. Don't